Whisper words of wisdom, let it be.
Your eyes look tired.
I just poured my heart and soul into that song, and that's what you have to say. You know what? They do look fucking hella tired.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Sure, if I could see myself, I look tired as well.
Just look in the mirror. Not the same.
It's not the same.
You know, I can't look directly into my soul. Yeah, I hear you. It's also because I'm actually having a sip of wine right now, and I haven't for the last like week because I've had a headache. So this is really nice to be.
Which means you're gonna have a headache tonight.
Likely.
It's worth.
It's worth it. It's so nice that you just get to show up and sit down and record, and you don't have to do any of the before work. None of the actual hard work. You just get. You're the talent.
That's what happens when you have the talent. You just get to show up.
I see how it is. You think you're a okay. You know what? People actually loved last. I was gonna say last week's episode, but it's been a few weeks since we actually have had a chance to sit down and record. But the Lululemon burner, people loved that episode. By the way, thinking it was just so funny. I guess the prologue is that what you call it, kind of the beginning, little chat we had before the episode.
Oh,
that was just so funny. It was
Lululemon. I mean, it kind of hits home.
It does hit home. Funny that you say that, because this case is actually pretty close to home in the sense that it happened in Mississauga, about an hour away from where we live.
Not even.
It's crazy. Pretty recent story. This case is really ranging over the course of like 5 years from 2005 to 2010. So yeah, I'm really excited to share this case today. We did a little poll on our Instagram just asking people about what their preferences were in terms of true crime in general and as it relates to podcasts. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people actually prefer cases, like you mentioned, the smaller, like unheard of cases, rather than doing something like Chris Watts' case, the Chris right. Watts family, where right. it's, you know, that's every right. podcast has covered yeah. it and it's kind of getting saturated. Something unique. Yeah, it's like these smaller cases that people maybe haven't heard of.
Yeah.
So I think this is kind of one that fits into that category. And this case is the Harrison family murders. Hmm. So let's pop this cape out. See how it's like been a minute. it's been a minute since I have been on the podcast.
Or just spoke.
So
let's
yeah.
pop this case open, shall we?
Oh, you? Okay. Let's pop it. This story begins with a loving couple, Bridget and William Harrison. William actually went by Bill for short, and that's what we will refer him to in this case. They met pretty young when Bridget had an early acting career. She did a few like childhood acting scenes that are pretty notable, and she actually went to the Stratford Theater of School and did some, she was in a few plays there, and that's actually where she met Bill Harrison, was at the theater. So when they met and kind of got together, she gave up her acting career and pursued education. She went on to be a teacher. She later became principal. Pretty prestigious background. She was really passionate about education and just like being a leader in that field, while Bill, her husband, he was an executive manager at the Sobeys grocery store, which we know really well here in Ontario. Some people listening may not recognize it, but if you're in the US, it would be similar to like a Trader Joe's. So like a pretty large grocery chain in Ontario, executive manager there, doing really well for himself. They were always seen as this like really educated, very like down to earth couple. And while they got married and wanted to start a family, they realized that they had some issues conceiving. They weren't able to get pregnant. So they tried for several years and just weren't successful at all. So they made the decision that they were going to adopt a child, and they ended up getting matched with a child. And the baby was 6 months old when they were able to take I guess, like, take them on as a full-time caregiver and adopt their child. So this was Caleb Harrison, and that was great. They went on. This was their only child. They didn't end up having any more children. They just really wanted to try to give Caleb the best upbringing possible. Caleb, you know, in early days, I mean, as maybe someone going through an adopted family, started to have issues in school, like nothing too serious, but he was kind of always acting out in elementary and high school. And his parents, Bill and Bridget, they were always there supporting him, trying to gear him right, get him back on the right track, you know, especially coming from an educational background. Bridget was very involved with his education and making sure that, you know, he did well in school. So he did go on to graduate high school, which was awesome. Like, from a parent's perspective, like, they were really happy that they were able to get him through his struggles, and he did graduate high school. And he didn't graduate? He did. Oh, sorry. Okay. He did. Yeah. And he went right into the workforce. So
what's the story? Like, at 6 months old, do you know where he came from, for lack of a better word?
Not too much detail on his biological family. Throughout this whole, like, through my research, there wasn't really anything addressing, like, you know, who his biological family was. Caleb graduates high school and he gets a job working. It's like some sort of factory work. And, you know, he was good at his job. People said that he was a hard worker. He liked working. He was, rather than going off and doing more schooling, he was thriving much better as working. So in the year 2000, he was working at, it was like a factory for this doll. It was called My Favorite Doll. And it essentially they manufacture or sell, trade, buy vintage Barbie dolls. It's like a weird thing. I don't know. I've never heard of it.
I've heard of that market.
Really?
Yeah. It's a pretty.
What? Yeah. I read this. I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. But yeah, it's like a specialty store that
it's like vintage sold Nikes, and it's like vintage.
So
like
weird that there's a market for that.
Action figures. And
so while he was working at My Favorite Doll, he met this girl named Melissa, and she was 19 years old at the time. Really quiet, kind of cheeky, down to earth, like little girl next door type girl. And he was drawn to her right away. She worked at the front desk and he was kind of just, you know, worked behind the scenes, and they would flirt a lot at work. He would pick her up and drop her off from work. And he was a few years older than her at the time. So I think there was like a 7 year age difference between them.
7 year?
Mm-hmm. Like he was, oh, okay. I think like 26 or 27 at the time that he met Melissa. Right. So Melissa came from a law enforcement family. Her father was, one of the like head cops in Toronto. And then her brother later went on to be a cop also. Just 2 years of them dating, they got married. Caleb and Melissa got married and had two kids, a boy and a girl. And everything seemed to be going great. They, you know, seemed to be happy. Everything was good. They had kids. And then seems like out of nowhere, they just started, you know, having arguments. Apparently Melissa wasn't really good at managing money, and there were just some other marital issues. He was a drinker, maybe drank a little bit too much, and they just started fighting a lot. And there were just some other weird shit that was happening in the marriage. Like in 2004, Melissa reports that she's got ovarian cancer, and there was just a lot of worry and concern that, you know, she at such a young age had ovarian cancer. And, you know, I think that also was one of the causing factors for them rushing to have children, because she was thinking, you know, I have ovarian cancer, like I need to have kids right away because who knows, like I might not be able to have them. So maybe like some of his family has said that maybe she had pressured him into having kids maybe a little bit earlier than he wanted because of these issues that she said that she had. But later she reports that she made up the whole story that she didn't have ovarian cancer. Yeah, like that's such an asshole thing to do.
Why people ever do this kind of stuff?
It's awful.
So even if you're an idiot, like even to go that low though, it's just,
I agree. But she apologizes and said, you know, it was actually just a cyst that she had, not ovarian cancer, like completely different ends of the spectrum. Yeah. In 2005, Kayla supposedly is violent with Melissa. There's some sort of argument that happens, and she calls the cops saying that he had put her in a headlock and attacked her, like hit her in the head. And that kind of sprung into where things started to go south. A headlock,
though?
Yeah.
What kind of domestic situation do you get in? Even if you're in an argument, do you get the other girl in a headlock? Like... You know what I mean? Like, if you get mad at someone and I'm like, I'm going to fucking put you in a headlock, bitch. Like, you know what I mean? Isn't that weird? Like, usually when you're angry at somebody, you want to, like, kind of push them away from you. Because, like, that's, like, a natural thing is, to, like, push them away. Like, I don't want to be around you. You're annoying. But no, I'm going to fucking grapple. Like, I'm going to, like, UFC style, like.
Who headlocks anyone?
Yeah. Like, that's so, like, 80s. Like, I'm a wrestler. I'm going to put you in a armbar headlock. You know, like
the only reason the only reason why I'm laughing is because it's later reported that she attacked him first, so he was kind of fighting back in self-defense. But Melissa always exaggerated the situation and
it sounds like an exaggeration.
Yeah,
like it's like someone that's not into fighting would be like, he put me in a headlock. It's like, what?
Like, no one does that.
Like, yeah, that's not, it's so old school. Like,
well, it could have been completely made up because a next door neighbor, Stephanie, was actually a really good friend of Caleb's. They grew up together. She's known him all her life, like neighborhood besties. She said that Caleb has not one violent bone in his body. That she just never believed the story from the beginning that Caleb was abusive in any way. She was thinking maybe the other way around, like Melissa would, you know, push him around, and then maybe he acted in self-defense in some way. But she just, like, she said that, you know, it was a little bit weird. That was kind of one red flag that went off for Stephanie in the beginning. You know, this good friend
having cancer, but
exactly, like, fuck. Caleb and Melissa end up separating, shocker, and Caleb moves back into his family home on Pitch Pine Crescent. Why are you shaking your head?
Because it's, you can't say a street. Like, just, I'm like, it's not, it's just a street.
You try researching cases and then
try reading words off of laptop. Like, are you serious?
Okay, so say that 10 times fast. Pitch Pine Crescent.
I don't need to, just saying it once, that's all you need to do.
Oh my god,
not 10.
So Caleb moves back into his childhood house with his parents because,
Pitch Pine.
He has no other choice at this point. Melissa's kicked him out. They've separated. Courts issue a 50-50 ownership. Oh my God, ownership. A 50-50 separation agreement, not ownership of their children. So she's supposed to get him 50%. The kids, you're... This is ownership. This is not like a car we're talking about. This is children. Yeah. So he is supposed to get them half the time, and she's supposed to get the kids half the time. And a month after he had moved back in with his parents, he, you know, obviously going through some shit, had been drinking quite a bit. He went to a party, and he was supposed to be the designated driver for him and his four friends, I think it was. And,
if I was going to a party and I know that my friend's a drinker, I would not make him DD.
How would you trust someone to like not drink if he's got a drinking problem, right? So anyways, he's like, no, I'm good. Like, you know, I'm staying at home with my parents right now. I can be the designated driver, because he wasn't really supposed to be drinking at this point because of the whole domestic thing. Like, it was in the courts that he was not supposed to drink.
Interesting.
So he goes to this party. Yeah.
The court can order you not to drink?
Yeah.
It's not like drugs. It's like just, okay.
Well, if you've got an alcohol problem. But that's kind of hard to prove.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Caleb goes to this party, and one thing led to another. He ends up getting drunk at this party when he's supposed to be the designated driver. Mm-hmm. At the end of the night, he's like, okay, let's go. I'm ready to go home. Like, let's gather up the troops and go. Like, his friends that were there with him, and his friends are like, you're fucked. Like, we're not getting in the car with you. You've been drinking. And Caleb's like, no, it's fine. Like, get in the car. We're good to go. I actually sounded drunk there for a second.
You're trying to act like you were drunk.
That was good, though.
That was good, though.
Hey, for effort. I mean, yeah. I had a glass of wine. So Caleb gets in the car solo. Oh. Bad idea. Mm-hmm. And not even a mile up the road, he drives head on into a taxi that was driving four other men home from a night out drinking.
So the four people that were drinking decided to take a cab because they didn't want to get an accident, and then they end up getting an accident.
Wasn't the same taxi. Four other separate people home from a different party.
I know.
Oh, okay. Just
saying that. Very bad. Weird.
Like, yeah.
It's unfortunate for the other four people that were in the car that they're
right
trying to be safe.
Correct. And
ironically still get an accident.
Yeah.
That's all I was trying to say. I followed.
It is fucking bad.
Yeah.
So
it's like, okay, I'm terrified of going in an airplane because I don't want to crash. So all your friends go on the airplane, they get there fine. You decide to drive and you end up crashing.
It's like rain on your wedding day. It's free ride when you've already paid.
That's nice and all, but that was not quite.
And as the plane crashed down, oh, isn't that nice? Isn't it ironic? Right?
Yeah, okay.
Don't you think? So they crash head on into a taxi. Sorry, not they. Caleb crashes head on into a taxi and kills the taxi driver. And the four other individuals that were in the car that caught on fire, by the way, both cars caught on fire from this crash. It was pretty serious. Two of the men were able to crawl out, but then pedestrians that were bystanders went over in the fiery blaze and pulled out the other two passengers. So the taxi driver survived the crash, but later died in hospital. So that was really bad situation for Caleb to be in, especially with everything that's going on with the separation and his children and living back at home. He was obviously ended up being charged with drunk driving, causing death.
Manslaughter?
No, it was just drunk driving causing death. I'm not sure if he got a manslaughter charge or
why
not.
Is that
usually,
often a thing. They never get charged with manslaughter.
This is insane. You'll hear the details about what happened, but it's true. The whole drinking and driving and killing someone situation. I mean, I obviously have a personal attachment to that sort of thing because of what happened in my family. But I do think that people who drink and drive and period, but with causing death to another person should get a much serious sentence. And Caleb ended up getting 18 months in prison for that. And I think he actually got out early due to good behavior.
I always do.
So this only made Melissa, it was more fuel to the fire, right? Because she's already very bitter with Caleb. She wants full custody of their children. She thinks that he shouldn't have any access to his kids.
After this, I mean, she'd have a strong case.
I mean, for sure. She did, have a strong case. But there were just situations where the cops were kind of catching on to her because she would call in situations that they knew were not true. For instance, this was weeks after the accident. Melissa reported that she had been attacked in her backyard while gardening and tried to blame it on Caleb and faked this whole story saying that Caleb had come and attacked her. And
she's not a very honest person, is she?
No, she's not. And then when they later did some questioning, they realized that Caleb was still, he broke his leg during the accident. So they're he physically could have not been in your backyard to attack you. That's just not possible. You made this whole story up. So there were little nuances of uncertainty with Melissa from the beginning that she fabricated all these stories. So anyways, that was all in fine. He recovered from, that situation. And his parents were really upset with him because, again, they raised him better than that. They were really disappointed that they, gave him a house to live in for free, gave him a car, drove him around when he lost his license. They did everything for him, basically. They were rock star parents. Melissa and Caleb went on eventually to date other people. And Caleb had a girlfriend, and Melissa went on to an online dating site and met Christopher Fattori, was his name. Guy was 6 foot something, huge. If you look at him, he's bigger than The Rock. He was raised in an Italian neighborhood in North Toronto and had graduated high school and worked at a Hooters kitchen manager. and a nightclub bouncer and a handyman. He actually tried to go to beauty school, but he dropped out.
Why is it always with these like big guys that are like big, you know, and they're
just having beauty school dropout. Anyways, so less than a year later, he and Melissa were married. And that was a little bit weird because Melissa, the idiot that she is, was still legally married to Caleb at the time. So she went to go get married to this guy. And they're like, you can't get married. You're still married to Caleb. She's like,
she's so smart.
She's like, oh, I just thought like after a year of not being together, it expired. Like she just didn't know that you actually had to file a divorce. That's how stupid she was.
Wow.
And anyway, so they had a ceremony and, you know, quote unquote, got married, but not officially because they couldn't.
It wasn't official.
And then they went on to have four more kids between the two of them. So she ended up having six kids in total, but she had four kids in 5 years. No, thank you. But also bad decision making. Sorry if you have four kids, but like when you're, well, she had six, but in this situation, like, with everything that she had under her portfolio, she wasn't looking good.
Well, bad decision. People usually make more bad decisions.
This whole time, Melissa still fought for full custody of her two original children with Caleb. But the courts stuck to their order in that so long as Caleb was at his parents' house and he was, you know, seemed to be doing good, having a job, he was still able to have them and abide by that ruling of 50-50. Now, Bill and Bridget, Caleb's parents, they loved these two grandparents. And if you're thinking of it, like you adopt a child and then that your child has two kids, yeah, like
pretty special.
You're pretty, you know, it was always a really special bond between the grandparents and the grandkids. So they always stuck up for Caleb and making sure that he was getting his fair share of access to the kids, even when Melissa would try to like not show up or like, I don't know, just try to like fuck around with the ruling of, you know, getting them. She was always there making sure that Caleb had his visits and everything was fair. And I'm sure this only infuriated Melissa more because that ex-mother-in-law, she was relentless, you know, like I'm sure there was some bad blood there because she just, if it probably, Melissa's probably thinking at this point, if it wasn't for Bridget, Caleb wouldn't be pushing so much for access to the children is what I'm understanding was going through her brain. But again, Bridget just loved those kids so damn much. She was like almost over-involved, would help them with homework. She was involved with their school activities and thinking back, like, you know, she just wanted to be a part of their lives so much because she didn't have kids of her own, you know, aside from Caleb. So in 2008, the courts had threatened to remove the kids from Melissa's care completely if she didn't give up the nonsense. So essentially not showing up on time or not showing up at all to the scheduled visitations. I guess it wasn't visitations. It was like a shared custody. Right. And she was like, fuck this. Like, this is getting stupid. Like,
she
I
takes
want.
The case, doesn't she?
You'll see. So, yeah. While this was all going on, Caleb's court hearing for the drunk driving charge was going on. And, like I mentioned, he ended up getting those 18 months in prison. So, he goes to jail. And while he was there, the grandparents were still able to obtain Caleb's access to the grandkids. It was like, it's crazy how that works. Like the grandparents actually do get a like a portion of the if it's their grandkids, they can actually apply for those rights to see the grandkids.
Actually, it's usually better. Like
it is. It's weird.
Doesn't it seem that way? Like it's always better if just give them to the grandparents.
It's true. So Melissa and Chris, so her new husband slash not husband because it's illegal. Not illegal, but like not official.
Right.
They were sitting back in the back of the courtroom while Caleb's sentence was going on for the drunk driving charge. And they were reportedly just scuffling the whole time. Like, I don't know, just being little twats about everything. So that's all good. And like, we know he ends up going to jail for that little, not little, big mistake. And while he's in prison, Bridget Harrison, his mom, pulls up to her house on the evening of April 16th, 2009. She was returning from a school board meeting. The house was dark. There were no lights
on. School board meeting. Like, it's just everything that she does is like.
Yeah, all like.
Responsible type.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. The lights were all off in the house, which she thought was a little bit weird because she knew Bill was home. He had ordered in dinner that night. So she's like, what the fuck? She goes inside. It's dark. Turns the lights on. Still sees his order and takeout at the table untouched. Searching the house for him. Goes to the powder bathroom on the main floor and the door is locked. She's like, what the hell? Breaks in the door and finds Bill in there dead. Kind of hunched over.
Were they looking after the kids?
No.
Thank God. Okay. Himself.
Now, his death was ruled, due to natural causes. I think it was a heart attack that they said that he had. There were some bruising around his neck that could have been caused from maybe a chain that he was wearing. But overall, there was no indication that there was any foul play. It was just considered natural causes. And there were real, I don't know, Bridget just didn't feel like she wasn't okay with the answer. She felt like at the time there could have been more toxicology reports or more work done on his body to see what actually happened. Because she just didn't feel he was a healthy, I think he was like in his late 60s. He made smoothies every morning, worked out. They had a Y membership. He was there all the time, like healthy, healthy guy. No other prior history of any issues at all. So he just dies randomly one day, which can happen. Sure. But she just thought that there were some weird things in the house that should have been questioned a little bit more. For example, the door was locked on the powder bathroom. When you're home alone, why are you going into the bathroom and locking the door behind you? Mm-hmm. That was a little bit suspicious. Mm-hmm. And also that all the lights were off. If you're about to sit down for a meal at the table you've ordered takeout and you go to the washroom, say, why are every single light off in the house? That's a little bit fishy, no?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So she was like, this is not right. But there was no other investigation on that. They just, I think it's like there's this thing with officials and law enforcement, it's almost like they just want to try to do the easiest route possible. It's unfortunate, but and in some cases it's not, a wash across the board. I'm sure there's other officials that do take this seriously and do like great work, but this case is just a mess. There were so many things that weren't caught at the time. So he ended up being cremated, which down the line really did not work in their favor because they could have done, more investigation on that. But we'll get there in a second. The day after he died, Caleb's kids go missing. They didn't show up at school. Melissa and Chris completely vanished. And it took a few days to confirm what Bridget had feared, that they packed up their house for the most part and just took off. They booked it, which is kind of weird. She thought that was weird timing. Like Bill dies and then they take off with the children the next day. Odd. Okay. So Bridget goes to the police and officers just wouldn't take action without an updated family court order. So saying, you have to officially apply for these missing persons, like just a whole mess. Right. And I hate how that happens. It's always like this long process. Days went on and she went to the judge, filed the appeal, and then a few days later she gained temporary access, sole access of the children, which led to the police then issuing an arrest out for Melissa because it's like a kidnapping. It's weird that they classified it a kidnapping, but it was classified as a kidnapping because she's not following the orders.
Right.
This actually went on for a while because they couldn't find out where this family of now six kids and two adults just took off. They end up tracking down the family in Nova Scotia because Chris Vittori went to cash, or I guess given a check for his rent payment, and he'd been using an alias, but he fucked up and he used his real name. So they like not very... not a good escapee of the province. So he cashes this check in his name and they catch him right away. They're like, we know who you are. And they were forced to move back to Ontario and Melissa was arrested. She had just given birth to the fourth child. So she got arrested, but then they let her out saying, as long as you're staying at home, just don't fuck up. So this is 2010 by this point, and Caleb and his parents were given primary custody of the kids while Melissa was figuring out her shit. She was only supposed to have supervised visits. So, you know, good move, Melissa. You could have had it way better. So then out of nowhere, on April 21st, the day before the abduction hearing, Caleb's and Melissa's 8-year-old son comes home from school and opens the front door and sees his grandmother, Bridget, lying at the bottom of the stairs, dead.
Damn.
So he runs next door to a neighbor and says, like, I just found my grandma at the bottom of the stairs. And it was just a weird, eerie case where the officials showed up to this house a second time and like just over a year apart from when Bill.
Is it the same style of death?
Yeah. So, yeah. Weird. So officials pull up and they're like, this is weird. We've been here before.
Like some poisoning.
Like a year ago. Caleb comes in for questioning about the death of his mom. And at first people are like questioning Caleb because both your parents die in like about a year apart. And it seems from original observation, it seems like Bridget has been strangled. They tried to say that she had fallen down the stairs, but the stairs were carpeted and she still had both of her Crocs like securely fastened on her feet. So it's like, if you fall down the stairs, like you're not, your shoes are falling off if you got Crocs.
Yeah.
So Caleb was fully cooperative and they're like, okay, let's do a lie detector test. And he was like, sure, no problem. So he was fully cooperative, passed the lie detector test, no problem. He also had a solid alibi. He was at work that day. So there's just no way that he could have murdered his mom.
Right.
And I think that this is where they start thinking, okay, something suspicious is up, because there was a little cause of uncertainty with Bill's death in the autopsy, but not enough evidence to say, okay, there was a homicide here. But with Bridget, there was clear indication that she had been strangled. And so now they've kind of cracked open this case and said, okay, like who is wanting these people dead and why? During Caleb's questioning, he was like, you know, I don't know, but you definitely need to call Melissa and her boyfriend, common law person, Chris, because it's a good chance they might know something. So they do. They call them in for questioning and ask them where they were at the time. And Melissa's like, I don't want to point fingers, but Caleb has never really had a good relationship with his mom. And they're thinking in the back of their heads, they're like, we already know he's innocent. We have a clear alibi for him and he's willing to do a lie detector. But she's like trying to make it play off like he's the one that could have done this. Mm-hmm. They call in Chris and Chris is like, I don't know, like I was running errands all that day and can't tell you much that's happened. So that kind of goes cold a little bit, and Caleb's struggling with the fact that now both of his parents have been mysteriously either killed. Well, we know Bridget's been killed, but now he's alone. He's not knowing like what to do. And at this point in time, Melissa does have access to the children. So this is kind of at a point where things seem to be, you know, going fine for Melissa, but again, you know, Caleb's still getting access to the children, and all along Melissa just felt like she deserved to have full custody. She wanted to move back to Nova Scotia, and you know, she just really was bitter about Caleb's involvement with the children and just feeling like he wasn't a fit parent just based on his history. She was just out to get him from the beginning. On Poor August, kids. I know, it's like so frustrating to put kids through that.
You know, it's sad.
On August 23rd, 2013, Caleb was to work that morning. And when he didn't show up, his coworker became concerned because it's just unlike him not to show up to work. So his coworker immediately drives over to his family's house because he's still living in the house where both his parents have been murdered now.
Oh, okay.
His friend shows up at his house, knocks on his door, and the housekeeper, the cleaning lady was there. And the friend was like, hey, have you seen Caleb? And she's like, no, he's not here. I've been cleaning for the last 2 hours, you know, like no one's here. He's like, are you sure? Like, you know, he didn't show up to work today and I don't think he would be anywhere else. She's like, well, I never clean his room anyway. So, I mean, you can go up and have a look if he's in there sleeping. Maybe he slept in. And he's like, okay, fine. So he goes upstairs into Caleb's room. And wouldn't you know it, he finds Caleb in his bed with a blanket pulled up to his neck. And he's dead. And he's like, you got to be fucking kidding me. So the housekeeper had been cleaning.
Carbon monoxide or something? Is it some sort of...
You're like really trying to make
figure this out. What is this? Like,
so there was a little bit of evidence of the room being disheveled. There seemed to be a little bit of a fight. There was some stuff knocked over and they could see that Caleb had been hit either with some sort of object, like maybe a pole or a bat. They weren't sure, but it looked like he had a mark on his head and he was clearly had signs of being strangled. The family now at this point is, they're just shocked. How can this happen 3 times? Mm-hmm. And
they know it's not Caleb.
So again, they go back to the drawing board and really at this point, there's no suspects. Like who would want all 3 family members dead? And the whole family, like Bridget's brother and Bill's sister, all the family members are coming together and they're like, you guys should have had an eye on Melissa and Chris from the beginning. Right after Bill died, especially after Bridget died, and now Caleb is found dead, you guys need to do better. This is insane. So they agree right away. They go in and start questioning Melissa and Chris, and they said that they had seen Caleb the day before at a soccer game for their children, and afterwards, Chris and Melissa took the kids out to a restaurant in this plaza by the Walmart there. So, you know, they explained where they were at the time. And Melissa said, you know, they went home straight to bed. You know, Chris was with me the whole time. We woke up the next day, went to work kind of thing. At the scene of Caleb's murder, they found some evidence of DNA under his nails, and the DNA ended up matching to Chris.
Wow.
And they're like, okay, we have clear indication. I mean, there are possibilities that, you know, somehow the DNA could have gotten under his fingernails and that's just a weird coincidence, but they had a good idea that Chris was the one who killed Caleb. So they do a little bit of fishing. They actually sent an undercover garbage pickup company to the Fattori house to pick up their garbage. So they collect some garbage and they find a pair of running shoes in their garbage fitting Chris Fattori. And the running shoes, I'm not sure how, but they tracked it down to the Walmart that they said they were near at the night before the murder. They tracked these shoes down to Walmart. Sure enough, they go to the Walmart cameras footage, the CCTV cameras, and they find Chris walking in and buying only that pair of shoes that night. And now they found them in his garbage. So it was like a little fishy. Whoa. They also found a pair of black gloves. And they had some pretty good evidence against him, but they wanted to also implicate Melissa. And they're like, you know, we're going to put ourselves in a position where we have to extend this arrest because we need a little bit more on her. We want to convict her also because we think that she was the mastermind behind this and that Chris just did the acts, right? So they actually, it's insane how long they went through this process and set up a sting operation to implicate Melissa. So while this was going on, we're going to backtrack a few years. In 2012, I believe it was, Chris and Melissa's house burnt to a crisp in Nova Scotia. And they put out a GoFundMe page to raise funds for the family that their house burnt down. They wanted to raise like $50,000. I think they only ended up getting a fraction of that. But the police set up a sting operation to contact Melissa via email and say, hey, you know, I'm Susan. I run this group of ladies where, you know, we have access to funds, or we have additional funds that we, out of the goodness of our hearts, want to contribute to different causes. Mm-hmm. And we're each supposed to bring in and kind of nominate a case or a story or a family. And we vote on who we want to donate our proceeds to. Would you be interested in us putting your name forward? And Melissa was like, kind of standoffish at first. She's like, I feel like this is some sort of media thing. Like, I don't trust you guys. And Susan, I guess, like, played kind of hard to get and was like, no, like, fine. If you're not interested, like, we won't nominate you for this free money, basically. And Melissa,
How did you get mad at someone for that?
I know, but she thought that
it was... hear the conversation.
If you're guilty, then you could see why people would be standoffish, right? Because if you're not and you truly wanted people to donate money to you because you just had your house burn up in flames, you wouldn't shy them away from donating money to you.
Right.
So eventually Melissa agrees. And so, you know, this they carried this on for a while. They sent her gift cards and like paid for... Look, a moving company to come move her stuff when they moved. Like, it went on for a long time. And then eventually Susan said that she had a nephew that could help with moving some of her stuff. And this is when they found an opportunity to go plant some microphones in their house.
Oh, that's a really like long
in depth that they went through this, like just to implicate Melissa also. Like, why not just arrest Chris and like, you know?
Why not just print some microphones when they're not home?
I know. Why set up this?
Seems like really
that's so true. Play it out. It's like they're so
not,
true.
They're not some like secret agents. Like, they're dumb people.
Yeah, like super hard. Dummy people.
Like, I'm go sure get them a free pizza and like when they're out, like go put some shit in their house.
It's
like,
insane the efforts they went through. So they ended up capturing a lot of footage. Some of it was really hard to pick out, but they ended up hearing Melissa and Chris talk about situations that implicated Melissa. And it's hard because you can think of the hours and hours that they had to go through. God. Because who sits around and just talks about stuff in their house when this is already
old news? It
could
be months until they finally talk about it again.
Yeah. So they waited like a long time before they That's finally serious. Said something. Yeah. And so after everything went...
Fucking Sue.
Sue deserves an award after this. Yeah. So Sue was actually probably like a 50-year-old man in a like behind a commuter screen. Yeah. So they eventually bring Chris back in for questioning. They're like, listen, bud, we got all this evidence now. They played him back some of the recordings of, you know, Melissa and him talking in their house. And he's like, you can't even pick that out. Like, how are you like what, you know, like. You can't say we were saying that. You can barely hear us, whatever. And I mean, at this point, the cops are like, true. Like, it is really hard to make out, but we can kind of hear what you're saying. And then they're like, we found DNA under Caleb's fingernails from you. How do you explain that kind of thing? He's like, well, I don't know. It got there some other way. Like, it wasn't me. And then they told him about the shoes and about the gloves. And slowly you can start to see in the surveillance video in the room, the interrogation room, it was 13 hours of them nailing this guy. And finally, you can kind of see the wheels turning. And now at this point, he's thinking, fuck, like, I got to do something because they have enough evidence to implicate me in this murder. I have to do something.
Plead guilty. Like, it's funny how people just always break down no matter what. It's like, that's why these things go on for so many hours. It works, but like, it shouldn't.
But here's what he said.
I didn't like Caleb Harrison. I didn't like the way he treated my kids. I didn't like hearing all the horrific stories. It was an awful family. They treated the children like shit. And I and Melissa had to live with it every day, and I couldn't watch Melissa's attitude and how sorry she was for everything that was going on. And I'm telling you right now that Melissa Merritt did not know anything until after it was done.
What did you do?
I I killed Bridget Harrison and killed Harrison.
How did you kill Bridget?
I knocked on her door. She opened the door. I pretended to have a letter to give to the children. She refused the letter, so I then forced my way into the house and I attacked her.
What did you do?
I hit her a couple times. I then proceeded to squeeze her neck. Until she stopped breathing and laid on the floor. I never meant to find her. That's not the plan. That's not what I wanted. I figured that someone would come home, or Caleb would come home and find her. I didn't expect her to come to the house. I didn't think that was going to happen.
I know that.
As for Caleb, I snuck out in the middle of the night. Also had no idea. I left, I went there. I got into his house. Proceeded to go up to the bedroom. Chest, and when he sprung up, we began to struggle. I threw him into the shelving unit beside his bed. He tried to bribe me with money. I didn't speak to him. I just knocked him to the ground and then proceeded to choke him.
So,
wow.
Crazy, right? When you're hearing him say about Bridget, I didn't expect him, and they blank it out, but he was referring to the 8-year-old son coming home and finding his grandma. He's like, I did not plan for that to happen. That wasn't supposed to happen. And that he ended up going in the middle of the night when Melissa was sleeping to go and kill Caleb. At first, he's saying, you know, Melissa had nothing to do with this. She had no idea, but they ended up having enough evidence on her because of the recordings in the house. But also, at this point, after his admission to the crimes, they put them both in a room. Again, idiots. Obviously, you're being recorded.
Yeah.
They start talking and saying,
they
like,
always talk. They just
they get, always,
a,
like, they
get a lawyer or something.
I don't understand how many times. Anyways.
It always works. You can hear when he... he's like, I didn't mean to. And the cop's like, of course you didn't. Like,
I know.
It's like, oh, God.
So cheese.
Like, so bad.
I know. But
of course you didn't.
Of course you didn't. I know, buddy.
Like but you know, by like that 13th hour.
Yeah.
The cop's probably like the guy just probably like, it's so sick. Like,
I know it is.
It'd be bad to be a cop and have to like.
Pretend you like people.
Like really like somebody. Oh,
man. The Chris Watts ones were horrible. Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, you're going through a hard time. It's like,
it's okay, buddy.
I couldn't. I know. Wouldn't last.
Sometimes
like,
they put their hand on their shoulder, too. And
oh,
like,
God.
It's okay.
I can't.
It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're in a room together, and Chris is whispering to Melissa. He's like, I told them that you had no idea and that, you know, you were just an accessory act after the fact. And she's like, why did you do that? And he's like, because I want you to have the kids. Like, I want the kids to have you and only me, like, get implicated. And they have this all in recording.
Like, people are just
nonsense.
So low on the gene pool.
I mean, it's, you got to look at Melissa and Chris. Like, you got to look at their history. And, like, they're not the best at decision making. So, no, they both get convicted of first degree murder. Actually, I think Melissa got second degree murder for Bridget and for Caleb. They did try to also add on the murder charges of Bill, but there just wasn't enough sufficient evidence in court for the jury to agree that, you know, and he says in this interview tape, if you want to listen to the full thing, it's on YouTube, but he says that I had nothing to do with Bill's murder.
Oh, really?
Or his death. Yeah.
He just turned off all the lights, even though he had like skipped the dishes on the way, which is like, are you excited to have food?
And then turns off the light and locks the door. Not buying it.
What?
Not buying it. So, yeah, the family is still pushing for some sort of resolution or changes in the policy because of the fact that they didn't take anyone serious this whole case. I mean, it could have been...
They did at the end.
At the end, they did. Yeah. But there could have been... Bridget's life could have been saved and Caleb's life could have been saved if they really took this serious as, you know, something malicious was going on. Mm-hmm. And now both of them are in jail.
What about the kids? Like,
the children are now with the family of, so Caleb's family, his aunt, I believe, has his, like, their family, his side of the family. You're an asshole parent if you go through the lengths of having an entire family taken out just so that you can have the children to yourself.
Somehow better your kids.
Like look how far that got you. Just
got rid of their dad and their grandparents.
You are a piece of shit.
Now he said though, like there were bad people, all this stuff. Like the grandparents?
Yeah.
How?
They're educated people. They clearly love your children and you're saying that they're bad people.
So there's nothing like factually that they did bad, like through all the...
Nothing at all, just hearsay in terms of, but I mean, look at who you're talking to, Melissa and Chris. Like, they're not the best.
They're gonna try to pull anything. Like,
they've had to take out like loans from people, like, not good with money, right? Not good with
can't even accept free money.
You're gonna just pretend you can marry someone without getting a divorce, and you just thought that wasn't a thing. Like,
damn, ours expired every year. The last how many years?
I'm just gonna move out and just like, we're going to just automatically be divorced.
They'll know. They should know.
They'll know.
They'll know.
How will they not know? No one's going to know.
No one's going to know.
No one's going to know. How will they know? Every time. Back to TikTok. Well, this case blew my mind, actually, given that it was pretty local. Again, for some reason, not hearing about this. This only happened, you know, five or so years ago. But... pretty crazy story, right?
Yeah. Sad listening to these dumb idiots all the time.
Dumb idiots. You're an idiot. You're a dumb idiot.
It's painful.
I want to do an episode. What do you guys think of this? Give us feedback in our most recent Instagram post if you're listening. But I want to do an episode of us talking about cases that haven't been solved or that there's still some sort of mystery.
I like closure, so I like solved.
You like solved. I know.
I want to know at the end, like...
But
what happened?
We should talk about what we think happened. So, for instance, like the staircase case.
Yeah, that was really
good. And the Stephen Avery case of making a murder. Like, these cases all don't really have some good closure. And I really want to dig into those details and
And they bothered me tremendously.
I just used the word
tremendous. I think that word should be
removed from your vocabulary.
From everyone's. Yeah, anyway. I think it's a frustrating thing, but it is interesting. And sometimes the unsolved can actually help. I'm sure there's cases out there by people just talking more and more about it and bringing awareness that it can actually help the case.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And
killer ended up killing the people that were talking about it.
Oh God. No, I think it's great because there has been a lot of awareness and a lot of fundraising too. A lot of podcasts have raised some big money for these organizations that, you know, like Crime Stoppers and all those that really go to help solve these cases. So anyways, that's the case we have for you this week. I hope you enjoyed that listen. As always, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Crime Poppers, and we try to put out new episodes every week, but we're in lockdown with kids and full-time jobs, so the struggle is real. We will hopefully see you next week. Give us any suggestions of cases that you want us to cover, and we'll pop it open with you next time.
Thank you. Take care.